Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have all of you here on a busy Monday. It's so glad to be back without crazy time zone differences where we had that weird 4-hour adjustment and everything. So we are live 4 p.m. Eastern time, East Coast time. Good to see all of you. And really just like crazy tragic news like happening as breaking news just a few minutes ago in Nashville. So our hearts are going out to awful elementary school disaster there. And also watching what's unfolding in Israel. It's all craziness. But we're going to also focus tonight on what's happening in Ukraine as Ukraine now admits, hey, we're out of weapons. We're out of bullets. Hey, now would be a great time, everyone, to talk about peace. We will see if that actually happens, because all signs seem to be pointing towards Europe getting upset and finally saying, we want peace. We're going to fly into China and actually meet with Xi Jinping because no one else is pushing for peace. So we will see the very latest in Ukraine.
Plus, we're going to talk about the hegemony of the U.S. dollar and how there are cracks in that system. You know, we're going to give you a little bit of a, we're going to roll back the clock a little bit and remind you how the U.S. achieved that hegemony. Here's a hint. It was not by fair play.
Oh.
So we're going to get to that and talk about what happens next if the sort of the rug is pulled out from under the rest of us who are kind of used to the U.S. dollar as a system, as a world order.
I love the hint. Here's a little hint. They totally dropped. No, it's not really a hint.
I know. I give it away.
Yeah.
I want you to stick around, though.
Give it away. Also, what else are we talking about? We're going to be talking about... You think you knew when COVID started? You think you knew when the rest of us learned about COVID, that's maybe when it started? Oh, no. We're going to find out tonight some interesting tidbits from the United States Department of Defense. The Pentagon had all sorts of COVID plans long before we ever heard about this airborne virus. We'll tell you about all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome in, everyone. Thanks to everyone who supports independent journalism and supports what we do on this show. We wouldn't be able to do it without you. And we get so many kind emails from you and messages just saying, you know, you've ditched mainstream media. And we just really are thankful for that, because we're not bought by anybody. We don't have any billionaires backing us. It's just us and you guys. And so when you support us, we're able to do this show. We're able to hire the team that we have here, the whole production team behind the scenes to make this show happen. So all we ask is it's a free show. So you can smash that like button and subscribe. It's totally free. You don't have to spend a dime if you don't want to.
Accompanying free show is free newsletter. So head on over to redacted.inc. You can sign up for our newsletter. Just put in your email address and then authenticate the email. And then you'll get a daily newsletter covering a lot of the same topics, plus a lot more. And it's delivered every morning. It's written by Clayton and I, so you recognize the voice. You can point out the typos and you know who's responsible for it. It's me. And I hope you like it. And I hope it serves as sort of not only a study guide to this show or a companion, but also a source for all of your links, because I know a lot of you like to share these things with your friends. And I will always post the original links to where any kind of data or story is coming from, so that you know I don't just make stuff up. I mean, I make stuff up. Like, I tell stories sometimes to my children, but they're terrible. And most of the time when the kids ask me to tell them a story, I repurpose a movie plot line.
Yeah, the one time... Well, anyway, we should mention the website. So it's redacted.inc. That's where you go to sign up for the newsletter. Redacted, not .com. It's .inc. Totally free. But yeah, one time our kid was like, hey, can you... Mommy, can you tell me a story before bed? Can you make one up? Mm-hmm. And she said... Yeah, okay. And then she literally regurgitated the plot line from the movie Splash.
Yes.
And my daughter was like, that's a brilliant story, Mommy.
Yeah. I mean, it was a brilliant idea. I just co-opted it.
Yeah.
So what do they know? And I think that Splash is actually an adaptation of the Hans Christian Andersen. So that was also an already borrowed.
You mean tell me Eugene Levy and Tom Hanks with a mermaid wasn't an original story?
Yes.
Man, you're ruining my day. All right. Well, let's talk about your top story tonight, which is what's going on in Ukraine. Well, the lies in Ukraine are starting to be exposed. It was only a matter of time, really. Remember all of those volunteers and all of those mercenaries who were headed to Ukraine, you know, to join up with the Ukrainian army to fight Russians, those U.S. Marines, former U.S. Marines, former members of the U.S. Army, those battle-hardened warriors who were heading to Ukraine. Well, it turns out most of them are leaving. Or were never in the Marines at all, or were never in the Army at all. They were lying. Now they're being investigated for fraud, ripping people off to the tunes of millions of dollars. Isn't it amazing how they'll set up GoFundMe accounts and people will send money and then they'll rip people off? That's how it happens. So we'll get to that part of the story in a moment, which is stunning. But first, could we be about to see peace in Ukraine? Could this whole thing finally be over? Well, the stars are starting to align. Today, Ukrainian President Zelensky is now admitting and doubling down on this, admitting that Ukraine is now officially out of bullets. Kind of a big thing in war when you don't have bullets. Like, you could use bayonets, you could fix bayonets. But in an interview he had with a Japanese newspaper, Yomiuri Shimbun, the journalist, Zelensky talked about a lot of things, but the biggest item that he let slip is that Ukraine is out of bullets. And then he kind of drew a line in the sand, and I thought this was really probably the most important point he made. He told the newspaper that Ukraine won't launch a counteroffensive until the West sends more weapons and ammunition. We're not going to do it. We're not going to be used. We're not going to be marching forward. We don't have anything left.
You know who's not out of bullets? The people that got the 70% that don't make it to Ukraine.
Right. Yeah. What happened to all of the weapons we have sent? All of the ammunition we have sent? Oh, I know. Now it's in the hands of Al-Qaeda. It's showing up in Africa.
But I'm confused by this no counteroffensive. Does it mean that they just stand there as cannon fodder?
Pretty much.
But they're still going to hold the line. They're not going to retreat.
What
because
line?
What the U.S. State Department and John Kirby was saying, hey, we can't let Russia rest. Right. So we need to keep pounding on them. Ukraine is clearly not going to rest, even though what they're saying here indicates that they could stink and use some rest.
Yeah. What this means, I guess, is, the remaining whoever's left in those trenches, like, you know, in Bakhmut and these other areas that have been surrounded.
Yeah.
We'll just use them as cannon fodder. We'll use them until the last Ukrainian, because that's what the United States policy is on this. Right. Whatever remaining Ukrainians are still there. We'll just use them as cannon fodder. And as we've talked about on this show, we talked last week here on the show, we are not saying that the Ukrainian army is running this war. It's not. They're gone. The Ukrainian army's, you know, toast. So this is NATO 100%. Now they're boxed into a corner, right? They're out of ammunition. They don't have any weapons. So what is NATO supposed to do now? They're screwed. They're literally screwed. And, you know, I have to say there's two things here that stand out from this interview from Zelensky. Number one, Ukraine has no army any longer. So what the hell is he even talking about? The people doing any kind of counteroffensive would be international NATO forces. They would be Polish forces, UK forces, US forces, mercenaries, Legion, you know, it'd be Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighters who've now joined the front and joined Ukrainian forces a few months ago. So it puts the onus now fully on NATO. After peace talks, you know, you can either do peace talks or dump a whole bunch of new weapons, new money into Ukraine.
And personnel.
Yeah.
You need to refresh the personnel.
You don't have anybody. And so this is going to be like a joke now because the Ukrainian army is gone. So you're literally going to have to, and that's why we're seeing NATO amassing about 300,000 forces getting ready, because Ukraine is done. So either you walk home with your tail between your legs now, or you send in hundreds of thousands of ground forces. You send in U.S. forces, British forces, Polish forces, and you literally complete the job that you set out to do, which was total eradication of Ukraine and using it as a proxy, using it as an aircraft carrier, as you said the other day.
To be fair, we've had there's been no confirmation that they even started with big numbers. Like, we've never seen a single video or picture of anything of big number of troops on any kind of front line or anything in such a Western publicized war. Like, where are all the people they had initially? Like, we never saw them.
That's a great point.
Really good point. Yeah. Why have I not wondered about that before?
Well, yeah, it's a good point. And also, right, we've also talked here, we don't get to see videos from the front lines because the Ukrainian military has kept the Western media largely away from the front lines. They don't want you to see that at all, right? They don't want you to get an accurate accounting of any of this. And we should point out that the numbers on actually who is alive and who is dead are also missing in action, right? We've heard months and months ago, upwards of 300,000 killed on the Ukrainian side. Then we got official numbers that push it around 100,000. So then if the truth is somewhere in the middle, that is awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful. You've literally wiped away an entire generation of young people in that country. And now they're, of course, wiping away old people as well. And then even younger people who are not even of age. So you really have no one left. In this interview, Zelensky says Ukraine can't fall because then Russia will want to invade other countries. He says this. He said Russia has imperialistic goals. Okay, sure. What evidence, by the way, do you have that Russia wants to invade Europe? There is none. But my favorite moment in this interview comes later in the article where Zelensky completely contradicts the Russian that Russia wants to invade argument. So he flip-flops like two paragraphs later. And he says, talking about reluctance to send more weapons, he says, quote, "There is concern in the United States and European countries that providing weapons to Ukraine could lead to an escalation of fighting. However," Zelensky says, "I want to counter that notion. I would like people to stop getting scared by threats of the Russian Federation." Okay, so then which is it? So that Russia has imperialistic goals and tendencies and wants to basically take over the rest of Europe, or don't be worried about them. So you don't need to be scared about them. What is it? Then you have a whole, then you have a whole group of European leaders who are right now invited to China to talk peace. So this is amazing. I mean, talking about, think about where like the United States has fallen down.
Yes.
Here. They can't turn to the United States for peace in Ukraine at all. So they're meeting with Xi Jinping about his 12-part Ukrainian peace proposal. Whether you think it's flawed or not, I don't really care. It's the only peace proposal that's being talked about.
Seriously, yes.
And so here is Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. He's going to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping this week. He said that he is grateful for Xi's invitation. And he says it's important to know his position on peace in Ukraine and to convey to him that it'll be the Ukrainians who establish the conditions for that peace. How exactly is Ukraine in a position to make any kind of conditions?
Well, I think what the marching line is, if you're marching in to talk about peace for Ukraine, what you're saying is, I no longer want my country to continue to foot the bill for this. But I have to say that no territory is off limits. Like the Donbas or Crimea, like this is what Western leaders have to say. That's what Olaf Scholz said to, who was it at CNN?
Farhid Zakaria.
He said, you know, Ukraine gets to decide what it keeps and what it doesn't. I mean, Ukraine did not get to decide to keep the Donbas or Crimea. Those people voted to be annexed and join Russia. But they continue to say, look, if Ukraine wants to keep this land, then we can't force their hand. Right. And so if this is not something they're willing to speak about peace for, then that's it. But we do want to talk about peace. So it's interesting because, you know, you can say, I just want to stop supporting these people who have no real plan for peace if they're not going to give up land they can't regain. But no Western leader is willing to say that. They're just kind of saying, we're not saying give up the land, but we're saying some peace. They're sort of speaking the forked tongue.
Well, and the real story is that Europe is being destroyed right now economically.
Yes.
Right. So they're... And this is what you're hearing among the bureaucracy and the European leadership, which is, we're done. Like, we can't sustain this any longer.
Yeah.
And in many ways, this is the United States' proxy war. Why are we involved with this? They blew up our pipeline. Mm-hmm. We're paying four times the amount for energy.
Yeah.
The real story will be next winter when they can't pay, you know, they have no stockpiles at all left. So next winter is going to be the real bad situation. And so they're like, wow, we got to do something here. All right, we'll meet with China, I guess. Brazil's president also, Lula da Silva, is going to meet with China this week, propose a peace club, which with China.
Only the cool kids are in the Peace Club.
To mediate an end to the conflict in Ukraine. And then, not to be outdone, Emmanuel Macron, 80,000 euro watch-wearing Emmanuel Macron, is going to go to China next week, but he can't go by himself. He has to take hairsprayed Ursula von der Leyen. I have to imagine, like, her hair probably could stop bullets. It's that amount of hairspray in that thing.
Hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I bet. Or there's, like, bees living there.
But not in Ukraine.
But not in Ukraine. Yeah.
Well, so, she didn't wear a helmet when she went there, did she?
I think it's interesting, though, that NATO has pushed so hard to make the possibility of going back to the original borders impossible, because NATO has been pushing to get Ukraine as a member state.
Yeah.
And so from Russia's perspective, without that would just put NATO right on their front door. And so then they're like trying so hard to make that avenue of peace just completely impossible.
Even though Ukraine literally means borderland. That's the etymology of that word.
Right.
But the borders are what are being fought over at this stage.
Well, I love that we're so concerned about the borders there. As David points out here in the chat, says, like I said earlier, you need to talk about the young Chinese men of military age coming into the United States through the southern border. Well, the southern border is like a sieve, right? So we are concerned about Ukraine's borders, just not the United States borders.
Clearly.
At all. And by the way, I'm not praising China in any way at all. We've been highly critical of China on this show. And it certainly, I mean, all you need to do is go back to videos we talked about where the rounding of people's pets and, you know, awful, awful stuff and COVID and really, really awful stuff. But they're the only ones talking about peace, right? So if there's a peace proposal that can start to be a framework to end this thing where hundreds of thousands of people are being killed, then I'm on board with that. Like, let's start there and let's go from there. But the United States wants to perpetuate this thing for the next 10 years. And that's, you know, we have a track record. Iraq, Afghanistan, the list is endless. So anyway, Macron is going to go there. He's going to meet with he's going to bring Ursula von der Leyen with him. And he's going to lay out the nature of the EU's relationship with China. And we'll see. We'll see if it actually could make a change here and actually have some peace.
I might have some optimism about that if he weren't bringing her. But as I, you know, we were talking about earlier,
you have to imagine she probably called him up, right? He's like, he's going to go on himself on his own because all the horrible situations in France right now, protests, hundreds, you know, tens of thousands of people on the streets. Right. And
now's a good time to get away. Pull a Ted Cruz moment.
And it's not, by the way, just about the retirement age. It's about getting out of NATO and it's about ending this war that has been happening for months in France.
Yes.
In Paris and other parts. It's gotten very little media attention. So a lot of the media attention has been like, oh, they're protesting about the retirement age. That's a piece of it. But for months now, there's been protests on the streets of Paris, ignored, and in Berlin and other places to end this war. I have to imagine, though, she probably got on the phone. She's like, Emmanuel, I know you're going.
I'm free that day.
I'd like to travel with you.
Yeah. As some are speculating, though, it's almost the same as bringing Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Because whatever he wants, she seems to be willing to do. And so that feels like a big wet blanket in that peace talk.
Let us know if you think we're going to see peace. Let us know that in the chat room. By the way, if you subscribe, your name will pop right up here on the screen. So anybody wants to subscribe, your name pops up here. There is a new rebel. Welcome. Welcome, Lung Mastini. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Nice to welcome. Welcome. All right. Well, do you remember all of those volunteers in Ukraine? Those bloodthirsty mercenaries from armies around the world who showed up and tried to join the Ukrainian military in attacking Russia. Like, they saw the opportunity, like, oh, I get to go fight some Russians. I'm going to join up, right? Well, it didn't turn out so well. So stunningly, the New York Times is out with a new article today showing just how bad it is. Many of them liars, crooks, and total opportunists in order to rip people off and defraud people. Like, hey, I'm going to Ukraine. Will you send me some money and I'll just rip you off? Like, that's exactly what happened. So, unbelievably, rare moment here from the mainstream media. The New York Times doing a whole in-depth piece interviewing hundreds of people for this article about basically the corruption of these mercenaries in Ukraine. It's kind of a stunning thing. Ouch, here's the headline, Stolen Valor. The U.S. volunteers in Ukraine who lie, waste, and bicker, I'll read the subline headline there, People who would not be allowed anywhere near the battlefield in a United States-led war are active on the Ukrainian front with ready-to-access American weapons. Ouch. This piece is actually pretty amazing. I encourage you all to read it. Here are go ahead.
I was just going to say really quick, the fact that you're saying that they're lying, cheating, all that stuff tells me if they didn't get paid by people to go over there, like, those are people that wouldn't have been able to afford to go over there on their own, most likely, right?
Someone
is covering them living there.
Yeah, there's some sort of money going. There's definitely a flow of money, and there's a lot of extra money to be had and stolen and put in bank accounts and the wetting of the whistle, right? I mean, there's something absolutely going on here. But all you need to look at is like FTX to know where, like, the money laundering going on here. So this piece is pretty amazing. Here are a few key paragraphs, though I do want to read directly from this New York Times piece. Quote, "Now after a year of combat, many of these homespun groups of volunteers are fighting with themselves and undermining the war effort. Some have wasted money or stolen valor. Others have cloaked themselves in charity while also trying to profit off the war," records show. One retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel from Virginia is the focus of a U.S. federal investigation into the potentially illegal export of military technology. So basically stealing the weapons in Ukraine and then sending it off to other spots.
Okay.
A former army soldier arrived in Ukraine only to turn traitor and defect to Russia. A Connecticut man who lied about his military service has posted live updates from the battlefield, including his exact location, and boasted about his easy access to American weapons. A former construction worker is hatching a plan to use fake passports to smuggle in fighters from Pakistan and Iran. And in one of the more curious entanglements, this is my favorite, one of the largest volunteer groups is embroiled in a power struggle involving an Ohio man who falsely claimed to have been both a U.S. Marine and a Longhorn Steakhouse assistant manager. By the way, I wonder which one he lied about. The dispute also involves a years-old incident on Australian reality television. Like, it's an unbelievable story, and like the New York Times kind of just cracks the surface on some of this, but I want to go through some of the deep parts of this because it's really interesting. So this guy, here's a guy, they specifically, now after a year of combat, many of these homespun groups of volunteers are fighting with themselves and undermining the war effort. Some have wasted money or stolen valor. They point out this Connecticut man. So keep this up on the screen. This Connecticut man who lied about his military service has posted live updates from the battlefield, including his exact location, and boasted about his easy access to American weapons. So who is this guy? This guy is James Vasquez, according to the New York Times. Here he is dressed up pretending to play Army. Now, according, I love when these guys put on like helmets and like,
you guys get that joke?
Army.
Hey, brother, I'm going to Army.
I'm joining Army.
No, it's from Arrested Development. Okay.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Buster.
I'm in Army. I'm a member of Army.
I have to go off to Army.
I fight in Army. So according to the New York Times, days after the invasion, Mr. Vasquez, a Connecticut home improvement contractor, announced that he was leaving for Ukraine to much fanfare because his local newspaper wrote a whole glowing tale of him. He was a former Army staff sergeant who left behind his job and family and picked up a rifle and a rucksack on the front lines to fight Russia. And then he started posting battlefield videos online, at least one broadcasting his unit's precise location to everyone, including Russia. He posted that he'd personally taken out 7 Russian tanks. So this guy told everyone.
Personally took him out?
Yeah. That he.
Wow.
Yeah. He took out 7 Russian tanks. I don't know how many, if he had help, you know, maybe he had out some help, right?
But I don't think even Captain America does that.
No, not even with the shield, like bouncing it off. No, he helped take out 7 Russian tanks. I don't know if he did it with his bare hands. I don't know how he did it. He's like Rambo. He used his story to solicit donations. Quote, I was in Kuwait during Desert Storm. Quote, I was in Iraq after 9/11, Mr. Vasquez said in a fundraising video. Here he is. I managed to get my hands on that fundraising video before it's taken down, by the way. I'm sure it'll be deleted very soon. Here he is raising money telling lies about his service. I want you to watch him. Watch his, like, I don't know, this army veteran's asking him questions, just basic questions about his service, and you can tell, like, he's spinning wheels. Like, what can I say? How many lies am I in right now? Watch this.
Prior to your civilian life, were you in the military in the U.S.?
Yeah, I was in the United States Army.
Okay, for how long?
Collectively for 14 years.
Oh, wow, okay.
4 years active and 6 years reserve. Mm-hmm. And 4 years IRR.
Okay, cool. So, and during that time, did you have any, like, deployments, any combat?
Yeah, I was in Kuwait during Desert Storm, and I was in Iraq after 9/11, and you know, got back out. And, yeah, I was out for 8 years, and then after 9/11, I went back in, and then I got out again, and so now this is a whole different animal right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. So I guess so. Even before Ukraine, we need to thank you for protecting America. So thank you very much for that.
My honor.
And now we are in Pryshchatyk, which is the main street of Kyiv. From what I saw last, you had gone back to the U.S. after fighting in Irpin, Bucha, and on the front lines in Donbass for.
Yeah, I mean, you can only be here for I'm actually trying to get a visa over here, but you can only be here for.
You can only be here for so long, and you know, as people in the chat pointed out, he also fought in World War IV. So he fought in Korea. This guy's done everything. I mean, it's pretty amazing what this guy has done. He's really like he's like a Renaissance man.
He's an urban legend.
He looks younger than me.
Right.
But he fought really military age anytime for Iraq.
I think anytime there's an interview going on where somebody's like claiming military service, that interview should always be done by somebody who's been in the military. Because it'll take them about 30 seconds to sniff out that the person doesn't have any idea what they're talking about. Because they'll ask simple questions what was your MOS?
Yeah.
Where were you stationed? And stuff like that. And then they won't have any idea. Because it's like there's so many acronyms and the language is so specific.
Yes.
That it would take them about 30 seconds to figure it out.
Hmm. Yeah. I once tried to make a reservation for my... Oh, did he? So I once tried to make a reservation for my stepdad, who's a Vietnam veteran. And they're like, what's his discharge number and this, you know, infantry? And I was just like, can't do it. Like, you can't fake that. I'm going to have him call back.
Never mind. We'll take the back of the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was for like a discount for travel anyway.
Yeah. And he's a hero, by the way. I mean, this guy was dealing with like, yeah.
Agent he was literally like, exposed literally, to Agent Orange
and like awful, awful stuff that he had to, you know, extractions in Vietnam via helicopter. Like that was his job. Like after disasters, they would swoop in. So go ahead.
I was going to say, Grim is calling out in our production chat that he said, yeah, he looks pretty young for a guy who was in Desert Storm because Grim was in Desert Storm and he was in his mid-20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So, yeah, he's been through it all, this guy, right? Anyway, so I wonder how much money he raised, like, you know, on these fundraisers, right? Making all this money. So when the Times asked about his false military service claims, he immediately deactivated then his Twitter account. So the New York Times was like, hey, we'd like some questions about your military service. Then he deleted his Twitter account. Oh, okay. And he said that he might have to leave Ukraine because the authorities had discovered that he was fighting without a military contract. He's like, I'm deleting my Twitter account. Not because the New York Times is asking me tough questions. No, because Ukraine is concerned that I might be fighting without a military contract. As if Ukraine gives a rat's ass about paperwork. Are you kidding me? Ukraine is concerned about dotting T's and crossing J's?
Other way. Yeah, that.
If Ukraine cares about paperwork, that is the most hilarious thing I've ever heard. They literally have Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighters in their ranks. They care about paperwork. They care about this guy fighting and he didn't get all of his paperwork done in time. Come on. You think they care about that? But my favorite part in this New York Times piece, though, has to do with the most famous U.S. volunteer, which is MSNBC's Malcolm Nance. Now, here's a guy right from the beginning on this show we called BS on this guy. The whole thing was propaganda from the beginning. We played you the videos right from the moment that he left MSNBC. He was like, I'm done being an MSNBC analyst. I'm going to fight Ruskies. Ruskies? Bruskies?
No.
Ruskies.
Well, I don't know what they are. I'm going to fight Russians.
They probably call them commies. to be fair.
Okay.
I guess, yeah.
Because that's probably what they think of him.
Yeah, even though they think they're still communists. Okay. So for some context here, 1 year ago, Malcolm Nance was an anchor, an analyst for MSNBC, suddenly announced he was leaving MSNBC to join the fight against Russia with the Ukrainian International League. He posted a photo of himself in fatigues in Ukraine, again, dressing up, playing army, with the self-aggrandizing headline, quote, "I'm done talking. I'm done talking. Now I'm here." Here he is telling MSNBC's Joy Reid about it. Somehow they managed to have a full camera crew in Ukraine at the time at 2 a.m. in the forest to cover this announcement from Malcolm Nance. Watch.
Why you are there and what you are doing.
Well, as you know, I spent quite a bit of time here in the pre-war period. And when the invasion happened, I had friends who were in Donetsk, who were in the Ukrainian army, who were writing to us and telling us, we're not going to survive tonight. We've been hit 500 times. You know, these are graduates of Defense Language Institute. These are my friends. And, you know, as the more I saw of the war going on, the more I thought, I'm done talking. All right. It's time to take action here. So about a month ago, I joined the International Legion.
Yeah. So that was the propaganda MSNBC was pointing out. And then, of course, if you needed some context, though, Caitlin Johnstone has a great write-up of this. In case you're unaware, she writes, Malcolm Nance has an extensive history of telling brazen lies to advance the interest of the U.S. empire and has suffered no professional consequences as a pundit on MSNBC for doing so. As journalist Glenn Greenwald has documented over the years, Malcolm Nance includes making the objectively false claim on MSNBC that former Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein has a show on Russia Today television, falsely asserting that WikiLeaks documents published ahead of the 2016 election were riddled with obvious forgeries. They were not. And falsely accused Greenwald himself of being an agent of Trump and Russia, who is in the deep Kremlin pocket. The New York Times says Nance has left Ukraine, and he's continuing to raise money. He's been raising money with a whole bunch of shady people. And apparently, you know, he says he's done talking, but he's been doing plenty of talking because he's pissed off a lot of people in Ukraine, apparently, according to the New York Times. Mr. Nance has left Ukraine but continues fundraising with a new group of allies. One of them, Ben Lackey, is a former Legion member. He told his fellow volunteers that he was once a Marine and wrote on LinkedIn that he had most recently been an assistant manager at Longhorn Steakhouse. In fact, the Pentagon said he had no military experience and he worked as a server at the steakhouse. In an interview, Mr. Lackey said that he had lied about being a U.S. Marine. So he's never in the Marines. So he could join the Legion, fight Russians.
As noble as that seems, it's not actually helpful to have someone who's not trained
like you
fighting
trained?
With you.
Oh, we're going out there tomorrow. You know what you're doing?
No. Then we're all going to get hurt.
Do you understand these basic maneuvers that you learn? No, you don't?
The web of lies. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say the web of lies here. Like, if he's over there, not only can he not fight because he was never a Marine, but what if they ask him to make a steak? He's like, actually, I was only a server.
I can bring you the steak. But I still can't stop thinking about the construction worker. A construction worker was going to get illegal passports and bring people in from other countries to fight. Like, where does this guy have these kind of connections?
Pakistan and Iran? Yeah, I don't know. He's getting like
not
fake
asking
passports.
Questions.
Yeah.
Again, how does he get all this experience working at Longhorn Steakhouse?
Right, but you saw people get themselves worked up online around these avatars.
Right.
So, you know, like, oh, this is the spirit of the world, but these people are actually physically going, right? And sort of saluting them on Twitter and, you know, resharing this as their American heroes. Like, you should really question what made you share that without questioning it then, if you're the kind of person who did.
Like, we're glad you're here. Do you have all those grenades? Did you bring a whole bunch of grenades? No, but I brought a Bloomin' Onion.
That's the wrong place.
It's like Vern from Stand By Me. I brought the comb.
Wrong place, anyway. Unbelievable that, and we're not done. This New York Times piece is amazing, but kind of tangentially tied to it, they managed to not really talk about this in the piece, but the Gateway Pundit did a good job. Douchebag, crybaby Adam Kinzinger, the warmonger who wants nuclear war with Russia, who cried about January 6th. According to the Gateway Pundit this morning, Adam Kinzinger linked to a pro-Ukrainian organization which allegedly scammed people out of millions of dollars. So there he is. That's James Vasquez right over his shoulder with his arms right around Adam Kinzinger right there. Friend of the show, Jordan Schachtel, broke this part of the story anyway. Kinzinger was on the board of the Ukraine organization that scammed people of millions of dollars. Oh, interesting. Huh. No wonder he had maybe, and we don't know his exact, you know, ties to it. He was on the board of this group that scammed people millions of dollars from people. Is that why he's actively pushing for more war in Ukraine? They could raise more money? We don't know. We're just raising the question. According to the Post Millennium, top Ukraine volunteer soldier revealed to be fraud, heavily promoted by Adam Kinzinger and Malcolm Nance. So we're just cracking the surface on this fraud and where the money was flowing out of the Biden administration into Ukraine, who's getting their hands on it, who's getting these weapons and then reselling them, lining their pockets, making millions of dollars, and all with, you know, because they put a Ukrainian flag pin on and they changed their Twitter profile. And then if you question them, then you're somehow not patriotic.
You're a Putin apologist.
You're a Putin apologist for yes. asking these questions. Yeah.
I guarantee those people are volunteer by self-admission only.
That's right. By the way, joke of the year so far in 2023 from Philip.
That was a good one.
That was good.
That was very good.
That was good. Okay.
Yes.
I have my moments.
You get the points today.
We've got more news to get to on your Monday. Is it Monday? Holy smokes. We're going to look at the U.S. losing hegemony, the U.S. dollar declining, and what that means for your retirement accounts. What does that mean for trading? What does that mean for, everything. Everything we do, everything that's tied to the U.S. dollar. Think about it. We're going to deep dive that in just a moment. We're also going to look at this new DOD contract that was just unearthed and shows, wow, they seem to know a lot about COVID before anyone was told about COVID. Pentagon, you have some explaining to do. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Ghost Bed, because if you want to get the best night's sleep, the right mattress is key. And from your sleeping position to other lifestyle factors, you need to consider it all to make the right choice. If it sounds overwhelming, you're not alone. So Ghost Bed is here to help. For the last 20 plus years, the team behind Ghost Bed has been designing comfortable mattresses for every type of sleeper. And they're the experts when it comes to pairing customers with the right mattress for them. So head on over to ghostbed.com/redacted today and take their online quiz to get your personalized recommendation. If you want to talk to a real person instead, Ghostbed has sleep experts that can dive deeper into your needs and help you find the right mattress one-on-one. Orders ship free and fast, plus you get a 101 night sleep trial to make sure that your mattress is the right fit for you. Now, right now, all bundles, that means if you buy more than one thing together, are 50% off on their site. So if you want to bundle something, you can just use the site code redacted. So if you put in redacted, you get 50% off all the bundles, plus you can take 40% off all Ghost Bed mattresses plus two luxury pillows by using our code redacted. Just go to ghostbed.com/redacted to take advantage of the offer. Once again, that's ghostbed.com/redacted and use our promo code redacted.
So someone in the chat was just saying, hey Clayton, how was the Roger Waters concert? And we didn't get really a chance to talk about it. I just mentioned it briefly. It was amazing. Roger's amazing, and he's one of the few voices, you know, popular voices that is pro-peace, anti-war, anti-war, anti-war. I took my 12-year-old son to the concert, and I told him ahead of time, I said, you have to understand, he is absolutely, he hates war. And he was not kidding. My son was like, wow, Dad, you're right. He hates war. And so anyway, I'll just show you a quick second of this. This is from the concert here. This is just a little, we were kind of up close. We're right on the floor. Natalie got me tickets for Christmas.
It was your birthday present.
Oh, birthday present. And so I got to take my son. And this is his farewell tour. I'm like, Miles, we have to take you to see a founding member, Pink Floyd. So anyway, here's a little quick moment.
Oh, you stopped it before he actually sings
it.
The
I know.
I did it just because
music.
We don't want to get our live stream pulled off.
Oh.
Right.
Oh, good point.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because of copyright.
Sorry, everybody.
Okay.
I absolutely love the video you sent us where he was like, if you have a problem with my politics, F off.
Yeah, yeah.
F
yeah.
off to the bar. Right yeah,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, go off to the bar. If you don't like, you know, anyway, it was great. It was a good time. Anyway, I just wanted to say that because a bunch of people were asking here in the chat. So there you go. There you go.
All right. And our John Wick 4 movie review coming never. Yeah. Actually, we don't do that.
That's right. Yeah, we did see John Wick 4. It was really good.
All right.
Could do it on locals.
We could do, I suppose. No one wants to hear that. All right, here's what you want from us. We're going to answer the question, is the U.S. losing its hegemony for the dollar and its ability to regulate global markets? It absolutely feels that way, and there are a lot of data points to support that, and we're going to go over them. Earlier in March, when President Putin visited China, no, other way around, President Xi went to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. President Putin said that Russia would start using the Chinese yuan for international payments. Now, Saudi Arabia is in talks to do the same thing as well and also work with Iran to create an economic alliance. This would cut the U.S. dollar out of major global markets and sort of lay naked the dollar as it stands, because the dollar is backed by a belief system and literally nothing else. No gold, no hard assets, a whole lot of debt. Former Assistant Treasury Secretary Monica Crawley was on Fox News this weekend, and she talked about how that fall from grace will in fact be very painful for all of us that are used to a dollar-backed global system.
Look, since the end of World War II, the dollar has been the safe place to go, and it's been backed up by a couple of things. It originally was backed up by gold, but President Nixon took us off the gold standard, so there's no hard asset backing up the dollar anymore for the last 50 years. But also it's been backed up by the strength and economic power of the United States and the fact that oil has always been traded in dollars. If that were to end, that would mean the end of the U.S. dollar. Look, there is a perfect storm happening right now, Will. The world's reserve currency, being that having that status has been a real privilege, but we've abused the privilege by wholly reckless monetary and fiscal policies over many years, certainly over the last couple of years, which has really devalued the dollar. On top of that, now you do have this perfect storm of Biden's weakness, his war on American domestic energy production, the Ukraine war, and as you point out, because of all of these things, we've got America's enemies led by China forming a new economic bloc. And all it would take at this point now, because we're at this pivotal moment, Will, is for Saudi Arabia, who has indicated that they're open to this, to say, you know what, we're going to be open to considering other currencies to trade in oil. If that were to happen, there would be a complete implosion of the global economic system, but certainly the American economic system. And if that were to happen, you'd be looking at sky-high inflation, just raging Weimar Republic kind of inflation. If you think inflation is bad now, just wait. But more importantly, we would lose our economic dominance and we would lose our superpower status.
Now, I used to work with Monica Crowley. Very smart.
Yeah, very this smart. Clip alone had our accountant sort of writing to us and saying like, oh, you know, she's like, I didn't even know this about the dollar not being backed by gold currency. We've talked about that before a lot. But, you know, this is a scary way that she's putting it, but I don't think that she is fear mongering. I actually like what she says here, that it's been a real privilege to have a hegemonic dollar, because how did we get there? How did the world come to have the dollar as the underlying currency of most global transactions? Well, the answer is by cheating. I'm going to tell you a little story. This comes from a very old out-of-print book called The Hidden Hand of American Hegemony. Because it's a real book, it's not in any kind of digital form, I had to take a screenshot of it, and I'm sorry that this looks a little bit too busy, but I want to tell you this story anyway because it's kind of fun and also naughty and also crazy. Okay, did I sell it? Good
naughty,
enough?
Naughty and crazy.
It's all of those things. So G.K. Chesterton once... I want to start from the second line. In 1974, U.S. Treasury Secretary William Simon was putting Islam through its paces. He flew on a government plane to Saudi Arabia to meet with the Minister of Finance because he was worried about the future of the international financial system and the place of the United States in it. Simon had put an extremely violent video on the in-flight movie system, and he was laughing uproariously while consuming prodigious amounts of whiskey. Alcohol is illegal in Saudi Arabia, though drinking it might seem like the national pastime to a new visitor in the kingdom. Ministers of state are not supposed to roll off their planes drunk, but according to another government official on the trip, this is exactly what Simon did. In 1974, the financial problems facing the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury were enough to drive any level-headed soul to his cups. The federal government was running an ever-increasing budget deficit, and it was Simon's job to finance it. But that year, the Treasury was preempting 62% of the debt markets in this country, and Simon called the cost of paying interest on the national debt just frightening. So he's realizing the economy is about to collapse. He needs to get himself drunk and get on a plane to Saudi Arabia because they can't pay their debts because the currency is collapsing and they can't even pay the debt on it. At the same time, the price of oil was getting higher and higher. Financial markets are in danger of collapse, partly because of the new inflows of capital from oil exporting nations. The strain could be believed, Simon thought, if the OPEC nations put a larger amount, we're going to flip the page, of their accumulated funds into investment in this country, or if the American public spends less and saves more. Since it was unlikely that President Richard Nixon, while facing impeachment, would succeed in urging the public to spend less and save more, Simon turned to OPEC for funding. And how did that meeting go? I'm going to skip a few paragraphs. Well, his answer to the myriad problems faced by the Treasury and the United States in general, and indeed by most of the world, was to sell bonds. In 1974, Simon negotiated a secret deal so the Saudi Central Bank could buy U.S. Treasury securities outside of the normal auctions. A few years later, Treasury Secretary Michael Blumenthal cut a secret deal with the Saudis so that OPEC would continue to price oil in dollars. These deals were secret because the United States had promised other industrialized democracies that it would not pursue such unilateral policies. So it was through these secret meetings, drunken, underhanded dudes in secret rooms deciding that the dollar could no longer compete on the merit, so they had to cheat. I mean, it leaves us all now to wonder, what if the U.S. had competed economically without cheating? Where would we be? Would we be where we are now with sort of an American dominant culture? And I'm not saying it's dominant, but I'm saying there's a perception of it as dominant.
I don't know.
That's a crazy story, right?
It's a crazy, you know, hypothetical to think about, right? If we didn't do it in this sort of underhanded way.
Because he makes the point in this book that France was really fighting it out to be the underpinning currency of oil trade as well in all international trade. And the United States just kind of, they edged him out with, they played dirtier. They played a dirtier set of cards. Hmm. And it's a great book. I've invited the author on the show, I think, a couple of times, and hopefully he responds to me. So the question is, is it the dollar that gave the U.S. license to control economies and world leaders and resources, and without that seniority, would it still be a superpower, as Monica Crowley mentioned? Well, perhaps not, and world leaders may be grabbing their chances to edge out U.S. hegemony. We saw over the weekend when Bolivian President Luis Arce, I think it's Arce, expressed interest in joining a lithium policy group with other Latin American countries, including Mexico. Now, he didn't mention the U.S. specifically, but he almost doesn't have to because you can recognize them in his quotes. He's basically saying that this is necessary to prevent the U.S. from subverting the market the way it does with oil and gas. He says we must be united in the market in a sovereign manner with prices that benefit our economies, and one of the ways already promised by Mexican President Lopez Obrador is to think of a kind of lithium OPEC. He says, we don't want our lithium to be in the Southern Command's crosshairs, nor do we want it to be a reason for destabilizing democracy, destabilizing democratically elected governments or foreign harassment. Well, who does that? With what resource? That's easy. That you don't have to pass the SAT to fill in those blanks. This would be a consortium of sorts of South American countries creating an organization like OPEC, but for lithium, a major component of the electronics you were probably using to watch this show, I would imagine. Drive your EV if you've got one. According to Reuters, Bolivia has an estimated 21 million tons of untapped lithium resources, the most worldwide, in an area of sprawling salt flats delineating the so-called lithium triangle that includes northern Chile and Argentina. Here's a lithium map from the British Geological Survey. The largest producers of lithium are currently Australia, Chile, Argentina, and China. The U.S. only mines lithium in Nevada. Even though by some estimates, the U.S. is home to about 4% of the world's lithium reserves, the Inflation Reduction Act actually did put aside money for lithium mining, but it will not be enough to satisfy the demands for increased electronics and electric vehicles.
No, and this is all of our own doing. I've covered this on the show repeatedly, which is the United States has shot itself in the foot. I mean, both in uranium production and lithium mining.
Yes.
I mean, we're sitting on a massive amount of it, and yet because of what the Biden administration, the Obama administration have done, they basically shut it down.
A couple of reasons. That and, well, for the, what's the one you just mentioned? Not lithium.
Uranium.
For uranium specifically, it's a lot of it has to do with litigation from environmentalist groups, which, you know, you can't as a politician have both things. You can't sort of speak a big game about climate change and then also want to increase production of mining, because climate change religious fanatics is what I want to call them, don't study the nuance. They just refuse. So they think all mining is bad and they won't allow this to happen. But you have to know then that other countries will do it. And so because the U.S. knows that it can't keep up with mining lithium at all, the Inflation Reduction Act provides tax incentives for what's called friendshoring. This was a new word to me. Do you know what friendshoring is?
No.
It means that manufacturers will receive the tax credits not for mining the minerals themselves, but if 40% of the critical minerals in their EV batteries come from friendly countries.
Okay.
Any country where the United States have a friendly free trade agreement in effect. So they know we don't have it. And if you get it from a friend, you get incentives, which is incentivizing them to not do business then with Chile and Argentina and Bolivia, China, and all of these other countries that manufacture it. But for lithium, just friending up to Mexico and Canada won't do it. And Mexico may not be game because they may be more willing to start their own consortium with their neighbors to the south instead of, you know, friend shoring with their neighbors to the north that are hostile to them. So that's, you know, one way hegemony is sort of slipping out from under the United States. You know, and if they cannot sort of compete on industry alone, then they need global hegemony, power, clout, right? Well, they're not keeping that either. China is now taking the job of the U.S. In the absence of leadership for peace. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez will meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping later in April. He said that he is grateful for President Xi's invitation and willing to speak about his peace plan. Brazilian President Lula da Silva is also going to meet with China in April, proposing a peace club. That's where all the cool kids are, in order to mediate an end to the conflict in Ukraine. And French President Emmanuel Macron will also go to China, and he's bringing along European Commissioner Ursula von der Leyen, who will give a speech later in late March to lay out the nature of the EU's relationship with China. Could that be a break in the sand or a line in the sand for where the European Union is willing to break with the United States? That would really hurt Joe Biden's feelings, I'm sure, because him and Ursula von der Leyen are besties, ideologically the same person, I would say. So about that superpower and economic superiority, when you lay all that together, you can see why Monica Crowley is saying this is a perfect storm of breaking of hegemony. You may say, though, it had a good run if it was 1974 and now here we are 50 years later.
Yeah.
You know, then if you cheated, you had 50 years to run on it. But now, like in that 50 years, even if they cheated to get there, they had 50 years to deserve it. And seems like they didn't.
A lot of people in the chat saying karma. Well, this is, and another person in the chat said, the dollar is done, done.
It's scary. We can say this, we're reading the tea leaves because, you know, we're reading history. We're trying to understand it historically. It doesn't feel good because we are American citizens and we're like, oh, what's going to happen to us? It's scary, but we cannot ignore it.
Yeah. But, you know, we should all be prepared for it. I mean, that's the bottom line. Prepared for what your retirement plan looks like, how you're going to invest, whether you're investing in like some sort of precious minerals or, you know, or real estate or something like that. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's starting to sound an awful lot like drunken people underhandedly meeting in secret rooms is no system for basis, or no basis for a system of economic policy.
Probably well, not.
I mean, it could be argued that in the room where it happened is how we decided that Washington, D.C. would be built on the Potomac. You know, the capital of the United States would be, and
the financial system would be based in New York City.
Right. Yeah. That happened in a drunken room, you know? So like, that's how stuff actually does happen, right? It's the backroom deals that always, that's actually how things, you know, happen over cigars and bottles of scotch.
But then what happens when the rug's pulled out from under it? You know, people who have money in a savings account, it's all automatically worth a fraction of what it was before.
But the people that are responsible for doing that, they're not on the rug. All their assets aren't in the dollar. Their assets are in tangible assets. So when they pull that rug, it's not them that falls. It's everybody else.
And people aren't prepared for it. I mean, people who are watching this show hopefully are prepared for it. You understand that if your money is tied to the U.S. dollar in a savings account, we're giving you the warning. We've been giving it to you for 2 years on this show. Absolutely. Personally, I mean, in my opinion, you should not have your family's future tied to the U.S. dollar. You know, it should be something that you're thinking about. How can I, every day that your money is tied to the U.S. dollar, it's losing value because of inflation and other reasons. But can you position that differently, whether it's buying gold, silver, real estate, you know, crypto, Bitcoin, if that's something you want to do. But for 4,000 or 5,000 years, gold, silver, and real estate have sustained everything. Like that's historical, you know, that's history.
Yeah. Right.
So just prepare yourself. No government currency in world history has ever survived. They've all collapsed. What makes you think that the US dollar will somehow be different? Like this time? No. So we're watching it in real time happening. So just prepare yourselves, everyone. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to look at this DOD contract. What did the Pentagon know about COVID months before we all knew about it? We're going to show you the new unearthed COVID government contracts that are actually really stunning. And we're also going to look at what does it mean to have digital blackface? You won't believe what CNN is saying now. But first, attention. Are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like 17 free stocks? With Moomoo, my favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface and it's easy to use, so even beginners can take advantage of the stock market in no time. Plus, it offers powerful tools, often reserved for experienced investors, like customizable watch lists and advanced charting capabilities. And now Moomoo even has a powerful new earnings calendar, so you don't have to hunt and peck trying to find earnings schedules for your favorite companies. Right now, for a limited time, Moomoo is giving away 17 free stocks when you open your account and you make your initial deposits. Even if you never do anything else with the account, you get to keep those free stocks. Moomoo has zero commission trades, and the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screener and their earnings calendar. So no matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. Open your free Moomoo account today. Get access to zero commission trades and 17 free stocks when you open your account and make your initial deposits. So to learn more, check out our link at redacted.inc/Moomoo. That's redacted.inc/Moomoo. And thanks to all of you guys for subscribing to the show. Good to see everyone here on this Monday. Nice to see all of you in the chat. So good to see all of you. If you do subscribe, your name will pop right up here on the big screen. Please, if we could ask you, because this helps us push it further out into the YouTube algorithm and Rumble algorithm. If you're watching us on Rumble, if you're watching us on YouTube, just hit the like button. If you're watching us on a TV, you can just like swipe up using your remote and hit the little like button. I see we got about 6,000 likes, and there's about 50,000 of you watching on our two different platforms. So if we could just increase that, it pushes us further out in the algorithm because YouTube loves to suppress us.
Thumbs up only. We don't accept those thumbs down.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's amazing, like big tech and how they just try to block you and censor you and really like silence voices. It's amazing, like my interview with Tucker Carlson, friend of the show. And it's amazing. It hits 1 million views, and then you can literally see the moment when YouTube then suppresses the video. Like it hits 1 million, And then it literally turned into a plateau. It's the same thing that they did with Eva Bartlett. The moment it hits a certain threshold, they stop it.
Yeah.
They don't want it to like hit Mr. Beast status. They clamp it down and they stop it. So anyway, it's really, really disturbing.
Well, thank you to the millions of you who did of you who did watch it.
Well, here's a question for you. Why did the United States Department of Defense post a job posting trying to hire someone for, quote, COVID-19 research 3 months before anyone in the world ever heard of COVID? Well, that's a damn good question, Clayton. Thank you for asking. The news outlet, though, The Exposé out of the UK, has the story. They're asking the question. They have the bombshell story. Here it is, quote, and I'll just read right from expose.uk. The world first started to hear about a novel coronavirus in early January 2020, with reports of an alleged new pneumonia-like illness spreading across Wuhan, China. However, the world did not actually know of COVID-19 until February 2020, because it was not until the 11th of that month that the World Health Organization officially named the novel coronavirus disease as COVID-19. So, they say, with this being the official truth, why does the United States government data show that the U.S. Department of Defense awarded a contract on the 12th of November 2019 to Labyrinth Gold Health Incorporated for COVID-19 research, at least 1 month before the alleged emergence of the novel coronavirus, and 3 months before it was officially dubbed COVID-19? It's a good question. Thank you for asking it. Let's dig a little deeper. So here is that job post. Take a look at the job post here, and you can see the needs are from Labyrinth Global Health on the 12th of November 2019 for almost $400,000 is the job. SME manuscript documentation and COVID-19 research, the job posting says. Then here is a closer look at it, just so you can see. Here it is, the COVID-19 research. That's what your job will be in November of 2019. And here's just a, so you know where, that's the date as well, the 19th, November 12th of 2019. Very curious, curious indeed. But it gets worse. The contract was for research to be conducted in, can you guess the country? Can any of you guess the country?
I can, but I probably am out.
Why?
Because I can see it here and I read the story earlier.
You read some of my notes.
Yeah.
Can anyone else guess the country where this job posting would be? Anyone in the chat have any idea where this job posting would be? Like, we need COVID-19 research and the country where you'll be based? See if anyone can name that in the chat. Let's see if anyone can name it. Yes, you got it. The answer is Ukraine. So your job will be in Ukraine. No, not the United States, but Ukraine. So as the expose reports, the contract awarded in November 2019 for COVID-19 research was not only instructed to take place in Ukraine, it was in fact part of a much larger contract for a biological threat reduction program in Ukraine. And you won't believe who was involved in this shady group. Labyrinth Global Health, which has the contract posted by the Pentagon, has been collaborating with Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance and the company Metabiota, since it was founded in 2017. Does Metabiota ring a bell to any of you watching our show? If you've been watching our show for any length of time, then you know why this should ring a bell. As we recently reported on Redacted, back in 2014, a firm called Metabiota, which specializes in detecting, tracking, and analyzing potential disease outbreaks, signed an $18 million federal contract as a subcontractor for Black and Viatch, which is in Georgia and Ukraine. Metabiota was started with the help from President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, and his investment firm, Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners, which, of course, he founded alongside John Kerry's stepson in 2009. Then surprisingly, the top Ukrainian prosecutor started looking into this shady connection between Hunter Biden and these bio labs and Metabiota. And then when Vice President Biden caught wind of this, he asked to have that prosecutor in Ukraine fired. Otherwise, we'd pull your funding. We know this because he bragged about it right on camera as we reported. Watch.
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was going supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "Nah," I said, "I'm not going to, we're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, I said, "Call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was, what, 6 hours? I looked, I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch. Got fired.
Oh, well, it's amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then in February of last year, documents show that Zelensky ordered the destruction of all documents related to the Hunter Biden connection and the destruction of the Metabiota documents that then were burned in big dumps in the back, which we showed you the video of that. So the expose wraps this up with two very important questions. Why did the Department of Defense pay a company that is allegedly a global engineering procurement consulting and construction company specializing in infrastructure development to help implement a biological threat reduction program in Ukraine? I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of this through congressional hearings. And why did both the Department of Defense and said company then pay Labyrinth Global Health Incorporated to carry out COVID-19 research in Ukraine at least 1 month before the alleged emergence of the novel coronavirus and 3 months before it was officially dubbed COVID-19? Good questions that we're still trying to get to the bottom of.
Yes, well, Congress has voted to declassify COVID origins documents, so I'm sure we'll see all of this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure we'll see things they don't want us to see. I'm sure it will not be a highly curated show of what they want us to see about China. I'm sure of that.
Without redaction. Sure. Without redaction. There'll be no redaction anywhere.
I have full faith of that.
Jennifer Ketchum wants to know, what was the website again? And I'm glad you asked, because I was just about to tell you. And by the way, I should point out that it's independent journalism, and it's called The Exposé. And we, you know, you can donate to help them out. Look, they rely solely on the support of readers. And again, we need independent journalism like this. So, I mean, I am not affiliated with them in any way whatsoever, but I read them every day. So if you would like to support journalism in any kind of way, go visit them, bookmark them. They do a great job, of really doing a lot of exposés. So, you know, they're good guys over there. So they do good work. I just wanted to give them a shout out. So we got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to look at the women's protests. You want to tell us about this?
So a woman who was speaking out for women's rights was attacked by trans rights activists in a very violent way in New Zealand. And now politicians are calling for accountability for these violent attacks. But the person who had attacked that woman was a guest at the United Nations on International Women's Day. A biological male. Yes.
Okay. Who did the attacking? Okay. We're also going to look at CNN. If you've ever shared a meme online, if you've ever shared a meme and it included a black person, you might be racist. We'll tell you what that's about, according to CNN. We've got that to talk about. To do those stories, though, we're going to have to move over to Rumble. Some of the stuff probably would get us banned or blocked here on YouTube, especially as it relates to, well, actually both stories. So there's just some risks that we would get blocked, banned, flagged and banned. So we've been banned 4 times on YouTube. So that's why we have a Rumble channel as well. And we simulcast on both channels simultaneously. So for the rest of the show, the stream will continue. You'll just need to come on over to Rumble and watch us on Rumble. And we're not going anywhere. We just can't do some of these stories on YouTube. But we will be back here on YouTube tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to start the show, as always. So come on over to Rumble. Our Rumble channel is rumble.com/redacted. Our stream is live there right now. We've got a great community over there. We've got about, let's see, almost 20,000 of you watching right now. So come on over to Rumble and join our great, great community over on Rumble. It's a censorship-free platform. They don't censor anything. And so we're going to continue the show over there.
I just love the comments when YouTubers come over to Rumble. It makes me laugh.
Yeah.
We just had a...
They call them ScrewTube.
We just had a subscriber called Parzival Ready.
Parzival, Ready
Player One. Which I think is from Ready Player One. So we're ready too, Parzival. Let's do it.
Yes. My son loves using that name. Like, he's playing Hogwarts Legacy right now. And
he loves
using that name as his avatar. So come on over. Okay. Thank you, YouTube. All right, we are live on Rumble, and we've got a couple of stories to get to here in just a second. You know, these are really crazy, stressful times right now. So what's your solution to relax? If you haven't tried CBD, then you haven't experienced complete relaxation. CBDistillery.com has the best CBD products, including their top-rated Synergy Plus collection. No prescription needed. It's delivered to your door. You don't need a prescription, but this delivers a sense of calmness and well-being that makes you wonder how you manage life without it. So what could possibly be this effective by taking the edge off of life and deliver a level of chill you've never experienced? It's called Unwind Synergy plus THC and CBD. It's only available from CBDistillery.com. You must be 21 years or older. Unwind Synergy is remarkably formulated with a full spectrum CBD plus hemp-derived Delta-9 THC. Say that five times fast. Bottom line, if you could use a little peace and calm in your life, Unwind Synergy is for you. And with over 2 million customers, CB Distillery is the source you can trust. Visit CBDistillery.com, click on the Synergy Plus at checkout, enter Redacted for 20% off. Again, enter Redacted for 20% off at CBDistillery.com. That's CBDistillery.com, not available in Idaho, Iowa, and South Dakota. I took one the other night to go to sleep. Oh, it was so relaxing.
Yeah.
Got in bed. It was so nice. Got my book. Was starting to read my book. And what a nice slumber.
Yeah.
Boom. Perfect. So good.
When our middle daughter was little, she would go, "Why does daddy always like relaxing?
I love relaxing." Who doesn't love relaxing?
Why does daddy like relaxing?
Who wants to live a stressed, like, crazed life? No, I just want to sit in a comfortable chair.
My daughter has never asked that question.
No?
Never asked that question. No. I'm in constant motion. Like, I'm not just a sit down on the couch and, like, veg and watch something. Like, I'm like, I'll watch about 10 to 15 minutes of something. Like, we're watching a show and I'm like, oh, I should probably get us some snacks, or I'm just constant motion.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Maybe well, I need some CBD.
It's when the kids were really tiny and they were a lot, like 2 and 4, he'd be like, "Daddy, let's do this. No, daddy's relaxing."
I'm like,
"No,
I'm done.
I'm like, daddy's sitting on the couch watching football. Daddy's relaxing." And so she would go, why doesn't he want to play dolls? He wants to relax.
Yeah. Why does he?
Why don't you want to play in a wooden kitchen?
I'm 6'2", you know, and like bending over, holding fingers, you know, where you have to walk.
Yeah.
And like your back is like, great, great, great. Anyway, I love I love those days, but I'm happy that those
with those, the babies,
the bending over, days are gone. All right.
Well, we want to tell you about this story because over the weekend, a Let Women Speak event became violent in New Zealand. The main speaker is a woman named Posey Parker, who I spelled Parker Posey all day today. It's not Parker Posey, the actress. It's Posey Parker. And this is sort of a stage name that she uses because a lot of the Let Women Speak sort of marketing and aesthetic is very feminine for a reason. It's feminine to the aesthetic of, say, Rosie the Riveter, right? Like, it's a style for a reason, because this woman is speaking out on behalf of womanhood. She's British, and now people are calling for the government of New Zealand and the UK to condemn this. Her real name is Kelly J. Keene. She is one of the most vocal critics of gender ideology because she insists that a woman is an adult human female, and she speaks about this at events around the world, and she specifically speaks out for single-sex spaces, for single-sex locker rooms, bathrooms, and that kind of thing. Because of that, they call her hateful. She is now public enemy number one for trans rights activists. She already was, but now more so because of the explosion of this event. Maybe trans rights activist number two, behind J.K. Rowling, of course. Now, Let Women Speak is a series of events where women show up to speak for single-sex spaces. They are not transphobic. I've told you many times how I have a problem with that word, because I think it's a throwaway term for people who just don't want to discuss the nuances of feminism and gay rights. I want to say, if you use the term transphobic, you are homophobic. And I'm going to get to that nuance later in this segment. Now, Let Women Speak are places where women want to protect their rights. And they want to protect single-sex spaces, but unfortunately for TRAs, is what I'm going to call them, trans rights activists, this just doesn't fly. TRAs do not represent all trans people, clearly, but the ones who showed up this weekend in New Zealand stand for authoritarianism. I'm going to show you these scenes. They are very shocking. These are people who cannot debate the nuances of women's rights or make a logical argument in order to force their way into women's spaces. So they used violence instead. So here is Posey Parker being attacked by Soup. That is a trans woman, we'll say, biological man. You know, Soup is now the symbol for shutting down discussion, apparently. So she's like a precious Monet. And it turns out that the person that attacked her with Soup is a Jewish Ukrainian Colombian refugee with ties to the United Nations named Eliana Rubashkin. Do we have the picture of her? No, not that one, the photo. I'm sorry, I added this very late. Yes, here. This person, biological male, attacked Parker with Soup because they said that she's afraid, they were afraid that Parker would be killing women, but this is a biological man attacking a woman. And this person was honored at the United Nations on International Women's Day on March 8th and then attacked a woman for speaking about women's rights. This is the world we live in. Barriers were broken
down. Yeah, there's a lot of men being honored on International Women's Day.
It's so nice for, right? You know, to like use these holidays.
Well, I just want to speak on behalf of all men.
Okay.
Like, we've had a glass ceiling trying to break through women's, like, to be in, you know, to be honored as a woman. Like,
yeah.
We've had a glass ceiling we've been trying to break through
so
for
far
years.
That hasn't been allowed.
We haven't been allowed to do that. Now we get to compete in women's sports. We're finally winning women's sports, which we have never been allowed to do. And now we're being honored at the White House for International Women's Day. And this is great. I mean, this is great for men.
I'm glad for you. I'm glad this feels good for you. Here are barriers being broken down by TRAs at the rally this weekend. It's hard to disagree. These people are making the point. Like, these are not the people you want in girls' locker rooms, right? They basically prove the point that women should have protected spaces if they are trying to burst their way in and silence women. Here, police were assaulted just for walking her down the street. All right, we can stop this one. There's a lot more of that. There are videos I'm choosing not to show you of women who showed up there to assert their right to say that biological women have a common thread and a common experience and are absolutely punched in the face by TRAs. And here is sort of an overhead angle of Parker being escorted out by police and attacked. And now, if you notice, there are some people in Black Bloc, which is the riot gear used by Antifa. So just kind of look out for that too as you see this.
Oh,
say she looks pretty brave.
Yeah.
She's kind of a badass. She's like, all right, this is the cause.
I think she also looks scared.
I think she looks scared, but I also think that she looks brave.
Yes, but she's used to this. She goes to these events all over the U.S. and the U.K. I believe this is the first one in New Zealand. And she absolutely just takes it. We've shown you some of the Let Women Speak before, where those, the one in New York City where the TRAs were naked from the waist up and like fondling themselves. We showed those videos, threatening biological women, telling them that they're more beautiful than the biological women and no man wants the biological women, but they want them, sort of flipping their hair. The media has, initially sort of showed that they are not on Parker's side, that they are on the rights of the TRAs. Here is Stuff New Zealand saying anti-trans activist Posey Parker leaves country after chaotic auction rally. That's wrong.
Auckland.
She is not anti-trans. She is pro-women's rights. It helps nobody to reduce things to these sort of throwaway terms. She doesn't care about men who want to present as women. She cares about men who want to enter single-sex spaces. She cares about women-only gyms and locker rooms and bathrooms and protecting our rights to describe our bodies as women with a common language, not erasing the language of womanhood. She cares about that. That is not anti-trans. Politicians are using this to posture. Either they say they're happy she was silenced or they're questioning why this violence was allowed. Here's an especially distasteful one from Scottish MP Austin Sheridan on Sunday saying, seems you can't have a nice wee bit of tomato soup without transphobes getting all worked up about it. That's a disgusting tweet. He's saying that like the soup was an appropriate way to respond to speech about women's rights. J.K. Rowling took him to task and he replied saying, well, I know, I don't mean to condemn violence. To which she said, okay, great. You could tweet again denouncing the TRAs who punched and assaulted the women speaking up for their rights. Point out that their violence is one of the reasons women fear their presence in single-sex spaces. But he declined to do so. He did not do that. Former New Zealand Prime Minister Winston Peters did ring in on this, asking why this was tolerated by New Zealand law enforcement, saying, if the person who assaulted Posey Parker is not arrested and charged by police for a clear assault, the question needs to be asked, why not? No matter what someone thinks about Posey Parker, says or believes, we cannot allow an assault in any form to be an acceptable action in our country. If you don't like what she has to say, then the answer is don't listen. If it's allowed to occur with no recourse, it will set a dangerous precedent that if you disagree with someone's opinion, violence is acceptable. Remember, next time it might be you who they disagree with. That, I think, is a super appropriate political response, and I'm grateful for it. But British Home Officer Minister Chris Philp did denounce this, but kind of in a like, yeah, that girl, let her say some stuff. Listen to his response.
When is the government going to take action to ensure that women do have the right to protest and to speak out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I completely support everybody's right to protest, especially women's right to protest. I think the way that women's rights have been threatened by the trans movement is deeply concerning to me. I'm very concerned about the law that was proposed, obviously, in Scotland that the UK government took action against. And I think what happened in New Zealand was terrible. I think that lady had every right to express her views in defence of women's rights. It was a completely legitimate thing to do. And the way that she was essentially abused by a baying mob was completely unacceptable.
Okay, really appreciate you joining us on this. Chris Philp, he's a Home Office...
So,
that lady, he says.
But he couldn't also say, yeah, that person needs to be arrested.
but actually, it's one of the first times I've heard from a politician that women are being threatened by trans rights activists.
I will say it was pretty, that was a pretty ballsy thing for him to say. Like, he's like, look, I'm sick of it and this needs to stop.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty good line to be drawn. I'm glad to hear it, actually.
Yes, it's one of the, even though he called her that lady, that's fine because lady is an appropriate term. She's a biological female. Now, in the same weekend that this happened, a lesbian group in the UK was met with protests at their event over the weekend, too. This is the Lesbian Project, who they want to, I know, shocking, be lesbians. And That's not allowed. I love this headline. Please keep it up on the screen for a little bit. The media says, joyful protests. That the lesbian project met with joyful protests because they can't stinking admit that these are two groups with opposing ideologies. So they call it joyful. Like, we just want to be a part of you. Like, we want in. We are biological men and we want in there because we're lesbians too. To which the lesbians say, no, we like one kind of biology. It's not hateful. That's what we are. We literally earned these rights in the 60s and 70s. Let lesbians have single sex spaces. You know, but this like joyful protesting headline, literally, I was like this, like, I don't know what to say. Like,
I heard her screaming from her office. Yeah. Okay. I was like, what? Come on.
Joyful protesting. Like, no, yeah. Because when you're protesting a woman speaking for single sex spaces, you know, that's one thing. But then when you're protesting against lesbians, like, we're just like you, like, come on, let us in there. Well, the people inside that room actually didn't find this so joyful. Here is one tweet from the event saying, drumming overhead for the last hour, chanting, shouting, fake sirens, people waiting outside for us to come out, protesting that lesbians are meeting without men present. How dare they? They have come to violate our spaces and teach us a lesson in compliance. Here's the next slide. Smell of a smoke permeating the building while we were chatting. After this meeting, and later door staff came to tell us after lighting smoke bombs, the protesters had left, I suppose, afraid of arrests. There was one woman whose attacker was in the protest talking to Met police outside. So lesbians daring to meet without men present is angering trans. That's why I said earlier, this is not transphobic. It is homophobic. Lesbians have to be allowed to be a lesbian. Stop it. Literally stop it. And I just want to reiterate a point that I picked up from The Coddling of the American Mind, and I really like this sense that cancel culture and silence is the new rebuttal. And we see this now in play, is using noisemakers, protesting, breaking into these speeches, because in a critical thinking society, we should be able to hear one another out. In academia, you don't like something, you rebut it. You publish a rebuttal, you say a rebuttal, you take your platform. But now illiberal activists are refusing to do this, and instead they can't debate the point, so they scream like a child and throw a fit.
Right.
Except the people throwing fits have adult bodies. So it's not only immature, it's dangerous. I saw a tweet today that made me kind of chuckle, where someone said, I always thought it would be like the MAGA people beating up, you know, feminists. I never thought it'd be the left. Hmm. And I mean, you know, I just thought like, oh, that's somebody who's clearly what thought of themselves as a liberal.
Right.
And thought of themselves as like this MAGA deplorables and, you know, lobbed onto that. And now is like, what has happened? Everything is upside down.
Yeah, gone are the days of like Thomas Paine, common sense, like publishing a pamphlet to have a discussion, and then people discuss it over dinner and in pubs, and then publish a rebuttal and have back and forth discourse. Gone are those days. Yeah, unbelievable. Well, we're on Woke Watch tonight on the show. You might be a racist if you've ever sent a funny GIF using a black person. Yes, you might be a racist. According to CNN, you might be a racist. You've been using digital blackface.
Well, in CNN's defense, they were sharing an article from Teen Vogue.
Teen Vogue from 2017.
Yes.
Right.
And so they're bringing this back up as like a new way to tell you that. And to also sort of
remind
give you
us.
Tenets of your woke religion.
Yes. And remind us of like, if you do this, remember, this is the new standard. So here's CNN. Here is their article. If you're white and you've posted a GIF or a meme of a black person to express a strong emotion, you may be guilty of wearing digital blackface, writes John Blake Analysis. What's digital blackface, CNN writes? And why is it wrong when white people use it? If you're white and you've posted a GIF or a meme of a black person to express a strong emotion, you may be guilty of wearing digital blackface.
You know, it's this idea of cultural appropriation, that if there's something that's funny, the Black race is the only one can take credit for it or share it, because they do have a shared humor that you are not welcome into. And I really like in the book War on the West, what's his name? The author, Douglas Murray. He talks about how, like, there's no distinction between your intention. So if you share something that you think is funny, it could be cultural appreciation, not cultural appropriation. But there's no room for that, because the woke mob's religion has to tell you your intention is that you are intending to embody blackness and pretend you're funny by association.
Right. It's ridiculous. So according to CNN, digital blackface is when you share a meme of a black person and you're not black, and thus appropriating something funny that does not belong to you, according to CNN. So the explanation goes, right?
Yes.
And because, as one writer explains it, you're not posting these things in the spirit of shared sentiment. No, instead, you're trying to embody blackness. Oh, I didn't realize that. So if you're not black, you shouldn't do that. So to which Morgan Freeman said this, and rolled his eyes. He said, yeah, come on, you're kidding. For instance, a few weeks ago, Natalie was arguing with our kids, and I heard her from the other room, so I sent her this GIF, right? So
shouldn't have done that.
I shouldn't have done that, apparently. Like, I use this one all the time.
No, what you should have done, like, is come and yell at the kids for me, and then you'll be my hero, and I don't have...
No, I'd rather send you this, because I'm like, I want to hear this. I want to sit back, and I'm going to use this black guy in a sweater vest and popcorn...
No.
And I think it's funny.
I didn't like that.
So I guess, according to CNN, that makes me a racist, because this guy eating popcorn is black. So that's digital blackface. Perhaps instead I should have sent this one.
Steven. But a black person should not send that one.
So a black person can't send like a Stephen Colbert meme?
Shouldn't, I suppose.
But they can send a black person eating popcorn.
I suppose.
Perhaps here's a better meme to describe CNN. I think we could all send this one, which is CNN is a dumpster fire. CNN today, the published ratings today is the worst ratings in their history.
Hmm.
CNN is a dumpster fire waiting to happen, or it is. It's already happening.
I don't know why. I mean, I really want to watch them not ask good questions about COVID.
Yeah.
And the Twitter files. I enjoy that.
Anyway. I just wanted to share that. I think it's amazing, but this is the kind of stuff. And so someone earlier asked me in a newsletter response today, like, why would you want to promote this? And we're like, we're not promoting it. This is a war on wokeness. Like, by drawing awareness to it, by shedding light on it.
Yeah.
You can stop it.
You can't respond to it unless you've given it some thought, you know, and I don't like sort of these throwaways like, oh, go woke, go broke. Like, I hear it. I see it. But I think that this kind of thing, if someone's really going to be like, you shouldn't have sent that meme, you know, because of this, then maybe you have to give it some thought. Like, we shouldn't just throw everything out, but think about how you would actually, because, you know, like I said, there are plenty of things that you can share that don't belong to your culture, that you can share for appreciative reasons. But, you know, the woke mob telling you that your intention, they know your intention and you don't, is an important, I think, response. So.
There's a great meme that kind of goes around every now and then. I see it. If next time I see it, I'll grab it and share it with you. But it's like this woman on Twitter calling out. She's like, if you're not from a culture that celebrates Lunar New Year, then you should not be celebrating Lunar New Year. And like, kind of just goes off with this little tangent. And right underneath that, there's a guy from China that's like, as someone from a culture that celebrates Lunar New Year, I invite all of you to come join Lunar New Year. It's like, bam.
That's great. That's funny.
Anyway,
that's like that. You sent me the guy dressed in Chinese garb walking around university, and everyone told him it was Philip, right? Didn't you send me that? The comedian?
Possibly.
Yeah.
What was the full?
He was walking around in Chinese garb, and people on the campus of UC Berkeley, I think, were like, that's a little racist. You shouldn't be wearing that. And then finds a real Chinese person, and they're like, I love it. You're wearing our clothes. Thank you for that.
There's like kind of a famous old Tumblr post where someone was going off on somebody that posted a picture of them. It was a white woman in a kimono. And this person's like going off on how it's cultural appropriation. She should not be wearing that kimono. And then like a Japanese woman underneath that was like, this is a traditional gift that we give people when they visit our house, especially foreigners. She's like, that it is a common gift that if you visit somebody's house, they give you a kimono. They're like, we love seeing people wear these kimonos. She's like, we love this. Like, stop it. She's like, don't answer for us.
Wow.
But, I mean, that's like the whole like woke anti like cultural appropriation. A lot of times it's like those people are appropriating what that culture should stand for.
Sure.
They're like, no, this offends Japanese people. And Japanese people are like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I hope it offends you.
Yeah.
Someone in our chat says, you know how we link in the newsletter, we link to sources and people who've written great articles. And we always try to highlight the sources here on the show. Every night we'll put the article up on the screen. You can see the newspaper it's from, the website it's from. We'll mention reporters when we can, if they provide that information. Someone in the chat said, can you also provide the sources and the authors of the garbage articles as well? Like, I think what you're talking about is like the CNN article. Yeah. And in fact, I'm going to do that. And in fact, it's based on, let me just pull it up here. It's based on this. Just give me a second, Philip, before we do that. It was Monday. It was in this here.
Yeah.
Here it is. Here it is. This is the Teen Vogue article that started it all. This is Teen Vogue, and this is written by Lauren Michelle Jackson, who wrote this initial piece. In this opinion piece, Lauren Michelle Jackson tackles the recurring use of black people as reaction gifs and its implications in terms of broader digital blackface. Okay. There you go. Lauren Michelle Jackson.
Well, just don't text her. She doesn't like it.
Yeah. And if you send Lauren Michelle Jackson a text, don't use a black person GIF.
I would say don't text her at all.
She doesn't seem like someone I want to text.
You're not going to say the right thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't know who she is. I don't know who Lauren Michelle Jackson is.
Well, according to this,
that's her.
I don't think that. No, I don't think that.
In the group chat, I sent the Grim reminded me it was the guy dressed as Mexican, so I sent that in the group chat. If you want to call that up and watch that YouTube video, I don't know if that's
okay.
You're into, but where the
yes,
guy
it was that
Mexican
guy.
And, yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
That guy. Okay. Right. Well, we'll link to that in our show description, I suppose, for some extra fun. So that does it for us today. Thank you for hanging out with us this Monday. It's great to be back on InSync schedules. What?
I want to say we have a community, and we didn't get to say it off the top of the show. I was about to, but we have a community that I would love all of you to, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. And if you're here on Rumble, just click on the big red join button right there. And again, you can become a part of our VIP community, our Redacted Rebel VIP community. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism and become a member. We post exclusive content, Rumble's only exclusives, videos that no one else will see. Also interviews well ahead of time. We're going to be starting some special members only live streams. So just for community members, all you need to do is go to redacted.inc, not .com, go to redacted.inc and click on the community button there and become a Redacted Rebel VIP. And again, if you're on Rumble right now, you can click that join button right there and that'll take you right there to become a member. So thank you guys so much for supporting what we do here. We really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone. Bye now.